call the meeting to order and welcome everyone here this morning. Some of you were with us yesterday for our summer retreat, which I think was a success and very enjoyable and informative day for all of us. We have many new faces in the room. We won't go around to recognize all of the new faces right now, but I do want to recognize two people that are important to the president's office and to the board that are new, and that is the new executive assistant for the president, Kim Lancaster, who is helping guide us through today's meeting. And then, even though she doesn't start officially till next week, we have Beth Dillon, who will be the liaison person from the president's office and the board. And we welcome both of them and are very glad to see them on the job. We have two new regents that our first order of business will be to swear them in. And we'll get straight to that. And with that, I get to give the oath of office, which most of you have heard before and is an interesting oath of office, to say the least. But I'll ask Matthew Winninger, our new student regent, and Doris Thomas. And we'll stand up here. Administer the oath of office. At the end of the oath, we get to give a pin, and this is a tradition that was established years ago under Dr. Gary Ranstall, and it is given only to regents, and these are people that are entrusted to oversee the welfare and success of the university, whether you're appointed or elected, and we'll pin those on you after the oath. So, Doris, if y'all raise your right hand and say your name. Do you solemnly swear that you will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the Commonwealth, and be faithful and true to the Commonwealth of Kentucky, so long as you continue a citizen thereof, and that you will faithfully execute to the best of your ability the office of member of the Board of Regents of Western Kentucky University according to the law? And do you further solemnly swear that since the adoption of the present Constitution, you, being a citizen of the state, have not fought a duel with deadly weapons within the state, nor out of it, nor have you sent or accepted a challenge to fight a duel with deadly weapons, nor have you acted as second in carrying a challenge, nor aided or assisted any person thus offending? So help you God. All right. Sam, since the success of Hamilton, it seems like maybe I will ask each of you to guard these pins, as there is expense to it, and if you lose it, you'll be expected to pay for the next one. Welcome aboard. Thank you. Glad to have both of you. And I'll let you all take your boxes. Linda Ball cannot be with us today, and due to unforeseen circumstances. She was unable to fulfill her role as Secretary of the Board, and Regent West has graciously agreed to accept that role in her stead. Look forward to Linda being with us in the future. So with that, I will ask our Secretary West to give us a roll call.
Okay, Chair Bell.
Present.
Regent Ball. Regent Brinkley.
Present.
Regent Henson.
Present.
Regent McKinney.
Present.
Vice Chair Milken.
Here.
Regent Nichols.
Here.
Regent Spiller.
Present.
Regent Thomas.
Present.
Secretary West. I'm here. Regent Winninger. Okay, Mr. Chair, we have 10 regents present, which represents a quorum of the board.
Very good. Thank you. And it is great to have everybody in the same room together. And we trust that everyone here is vaccinated and is telling anyone they know that isn't to please get vaccinated. Next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes, which you have had in your possession for some time on our May 7th meeting. So I'll entertain a motion for that.
So moved.
Motion from Regent Brinkley.
Second.
Second from Regent Milliken. Any discussion on the minutes? Comments? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Minutes stand approved. We will move into the next portion of our agenda, which involves the academic affairs, a committee that I've had the pleasure of chairing for several years and which Regent West is now chairing, and I hand it over to you.
Okay, thank you very much. We had four items on the agenda for the last committee meeting of academic affairs, and these items were all approved at that meeting. Does anyone want to remove any items from the consent agenda? If not, then I will ask for a motion to approve action items A1 through 4.
Second.
Any discussion?
I think this is a great addition to our curriculum. I'm very happy to see this come about.
I agree with you, especially like the Bachelor of Arts in Legal Studies. I think that's a really good one. This is our first meeting with the new Provost Fisher, and I just wanted to give him an opportunity if he wanted to make any additional comments since he wasn't at the committee meeting.
I would just say that in higher education today, one of the things you talk about all the time is stackable degrees and stackable certificates, and I think this fills some of those voids that will allow students to broaden what their education is.
Thank you. Any further discussion or comments?
I would just like to echo what Curry said. I feel like this is just very good to have. And the legal studies, it counts. Sit right next to me. I had that program, I think, the time that I started. I think that I would have gone that way. I think it's excellent.
I agree. I think so, too. Thank you. Any further discussion or comments? Okay, being no further discussion, we will call for a vote then to approve items A1 through 4. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. Motion is passed. Right, and the next thing on the agenda is an information item, and Rob Hale is going to be presenting to us on that. And let's see if I can say this. This is a tongue twister. It's discussion or overview of the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges, or SACS.
Thanks so much. When President Caboni emailed me last night to ask what I was going to wear today, I thought it was kind of odd, but I guess it makes sense. I just wanted to beat him to the punch on the joke. I could. So I have the glorious job this year of being a SACS liaison, and I stepped into the role just in time to put together with a great team of people a 200-page report that has about 800 attachments. So I don't know what I did to deserve that, but it must have been pretty awful. You want to go to the next slide, Jeff? So we had a great team that worked on this. Thanks. We had a great team that worked on this, and I put everybody's name up there. I'll let you read those names, but I could tell you stories about all of these people and the great work that we did. I don't know if you heard, but we had a pandemic the last several months, and it's still going on. And to put something together like this during a pandemic is particularly challenging and stressful. So this group just did a great job. And like I said, I could tell you a story about all of them. A few people that I want to give a shout out to that aren't up there. Jessica Steenbergen, who works in our office, who did a lot of the technical work on this and putting the document together and that kind of work. And then also Tuesday Helbig, who's Director of Institutional Research. Tuesday just does great work for all of us. And that shop works beautifully. So you want to, next slide. I'm hitting the green button. Is that the one I need to hit? So what is the fifth year report? So I thought I would, I've only got about 70 slides to show you on this, but no, I've only got six. But the first slide I wanted to show you is just what SACS tells us that we're supposed to do with this fifth year report. Essentially, there's a reaffirmation cycle that you go through. It's about 10 years, and they do a really smart thing, and I won't say SACS does a whole lot of smart things, but this is one of the smart things they do, is they have you do a preliminary report that covers some of the more challenging standards of accreditation that you're supposed to talk about. And so we did our 200-page report. We did those hit those standards. And then we got our result, which was great. And they really have not told us anything that we need to do differently at this point to put ourselves in a better place. So that's kind of unusual for this kind of report. Usually they'll have one or two things that they'll ding you on. So we feel pretty great about that. Let me give you a sense of some of the content here. So I took all the magic numbers out. I took all the bureaucraties and tried to streamline the kinds of things we talked about in this report. And I won't talk about all of them because you guys can read those labels there. But just to give you a sampling, qualified administrative officers. So one of the things you have to do is show that you've hired qualified people. You have to provide evidence that you've hired qualified people. And then you have to show that you're evaluating them regularly. So a lot of it is you can't just say, yeah, we do that. You have to kind of produce CVs. You have to show redacted evaluations. That was one of the fun things that we learned at the end of the process is now they want redacted evaluations. So we put those together a couple of months before it was due. And that's one of the overall challenges of this process is if you've ever worked with an accrediting agency, it's clear to the people that do this work every day, but a lot of it is just trying to decipher what these mean. You call the SACS office to learn about what kind of things you have to go in there. You go to trainings and that sort of thing. A couple of other highlights here. Student support services. That's something that I didn't know a whole lot about. But that's one of the values of this process to me was being able to see the whole big picture of the university and see some of the great things that go on. I know about the great support services on the academic side because I work on the academic side and worked in that part for a while. I didn't know about all of the support services on the ESE side. And so there's really no lack of support for students. And that was pretty gratifying to see that. The safety piece of this was pretty interesting given the year that we went through. I was really impressed with the safety protocols that we have in place and learned about that. David Oliver's just done a great job there. David kind of parachuted into our committee at the end and helped us massage some of the sections and make those stronger. So I felt really good about that. But I could fill your time, with hours and hours of telling you all about this stuff. And you can go look at the report if you want. I'll make sure the link's available to you after we're done if you want to look at any of that stuff, and you can see how we perform. Again, the way the process works, though, is you have to demonstrate compliance with those standards that I showed you. You have to use specific evidence. You have to use emails. You have to use policy statements. You have to use data, numbers of faculty, those kinds of things. We quote from the faculty handbook a lot, our policy pages, to show the mission statement, the strategic plan. We go to all of those things and demonstrate that we're in compliance. We also submit an update on our quality enhancement plan that was put together in the last reaffirmation cycle, and that's on evidence and argument. Molly Kirby and Stacy Wilson led that effort. And so we just report out on what happened with that. So what's next? We got to form a committee for our 2025 accreditation report and visit. It's a much more comprehensive report that we put together. The SACS folks, the SACS committee come here. They, take a look at the place. They interview people on campus to make sure that we're in compliance. We have to develop another quality enhancement plan. We got to figure out what the topic is going to be for that. We have to ensure that all of our units are aware of the implications of the process and review our policies in light of best practices. Because, things evolve over the years. We've improved a lot of things. We need to make sure we document that and that's clear to everybody. The big thing I think we need to try to do is to make the process meaningful. And that may sound obvious, but there's a real checkbox mentality that can kind of happen with an accreditation report, right? We've just got to get this daggone thing done because we don't want them to take away our accreditation, and we certainly don't want them to take away our accreditation, so we'll check the boxes that we need to check. But it's also an opportunity for us just to get better, right? The standards, you look at them sometimes. If you don't look at it regularly, it's like, oh my gosh, we've got to do this. But if you think about it and we get the units really thinking about what this means, it can be an excellent lever to help us get better. We got to start collecting data and ensure that we have the needed data for 2025. So we're going to start rolling. We're going to form the committee in the next month or so and get cracking so that we don't have to rush at the last minute, so that we have enough time to do this and make it meaningful. So that's the big goal. Happy to answer any questions if you have any questions.
Rob, I would just congratulate you and your committee on getting through this with such a good report. And I'm sure our new provost is very happy to step into the situation that he has here. Although we've got to immediately start on the next round, but it's much more pleasant to start on the next round with the type of report you were given. So congratulations.
Thanks, appreciate it.
For our new regents, too, I think it's worth emphasizing that this is drop-dead serious stuff. SACS has the ability to shut down a university if they want to. So this is some of the most serious work that gets done on campus.
Chair Barrow, if I may, this work is underappreciated, I might say unappreciated by the institution a lot of times. It is invisible to many folks. But it is a tremendously onerous and difficult task to assemble this report in such a way that it conveys what we're doing as an institution, the progress we've made, and doing it 200 page in a compelling way is also really rough. I'm glad we had the former chair of our English department leading this up, because when you read the report, it actually talks about not just what we do, but what we aspire to be. And I'm thankful, Rob, for your good work, but also the work of everyone on the committee. And to get through this process with no questions or revisions is remarkable. So congratulations to the whole team. I'm thankful for everything.
Thanks.
you, Rob, and congratulations to you and your team and for an excellent report.
Okay, thank you very much for your request. We'll move to the finance and budget portion of the agenda next. Before we do that, let me personally thank Jason McKinney for being willing to step up and chair this extremely important committee again. As we saw in yesterday's retreat, the amount of work that's been done here the last several years has been enormous and I think fruitful in positioning the university to be successful moving forward. Regent McKinney's background as a CPA gives him great experience and knowledge, and I think we've all relied on him a lot the last couple of years. So thanks for chairing this committee again. All right, we only have one item on our consent agenda for this meeting, FB1, approval of the personnel actions. I have a motion.
So moved.
Introduction. No question. Does anybody have any discussion related to FB1? Hearing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Like sign? All right, motion passes. We have Jesse Napier here to give us a presentation and an update on our internal audit, where it is and where she's, what she found as she's been digging in.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you all for giving me some time this morning to provide you on an update of where things are at with the internal audit function. Just to start off, I know there are many other new faces in the room, so I'll provide just a quick introduction. My name is Jesse Napier. I'm a certified internal auditor. I started as the director of internal audit in just a little over a month ago, so mid-June. Haven't been here long. I'm brand new to the Hill. Excited to be here. I attended the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, where I majored in accounting, and immediately following graduation, worked in the internal audit function there for a few years before I moved back to the Nashville area, where I'm originally from. And from there, I went to Vanderbilt University and worked in the internal audit function there for the past 4 years prior to becoming director here at WKU. So as I said, I'm excited to be here. Look forward to working with each of you moving forward. So today, I'm just going to give you a quick update on what I have been doing, I guess, for the past a little over a month, give you an update on where things were left off by the prior audit team, some things that are currently in process, and then just take a glance looking forward and some plans for the upcoming quarters. So as you all know, the office has been vacant for some time, a little over a year. And so when I started, I just tried to sort of pick up where the prior team left off. There were a few projects that were completed by the prior audit team that have not yet been presented. So I wanted to just touch base on those starting out. Okay, so as I mentioned, by the prior audit team, there were two reports finalized, and those two were the staff termination procedures review, and this one was, as it implies, was a look at the staff termination procedures. This review resulted in just one recommendation that was assessed to have a moderate or medium risk ranking, and this finding really just had to do with updating some policy revisions or making policy revisions and the development of some additional policies, a recommendation to just consider those. So that one has been, as I said, issued in final, so I'm working with the process owners to kind of obtain an update on that one. And the next one was the President's Travel and Entertainment Audit, and this the scope of this one was specifically the fiscal year 2019 expenses. This is an annual review performed by the Office of Internal Audit, and this one resulted in just one low-risk rating recommendation. There were also a couple of draft reports and memos, so the work was completed on these projects, but these have not yet been issued and final. As there have been some personnel changes in a couple of these areas, I'm just working with the process owners to ensure they're aware of the work that was done, provide them with a final version of the report, and talk through those recommendations with them. So I'll be providing an update on this at the October committee meeting. All right, so now moving to some things that are currently in progress. So as you all probably know, I'm working through the annual risk assessment process. I wanted to touch base on sort of the purpose of this process and the way I'm planning to go about it this year, and then also the results that will come from this assessment. So I'll just throw in a caveat as well. If you have not yet had a chance to take a look at the risk assessment questionnaire, I believe Regent McKinney distributed this to the board. If you all have a chance to look at that, I would greatly appreciate your participation in this. It involves collecting information from not only the Board of Regents, but also university leadership, including the President's Cabinet. I've been busy in some meetings over the past few weeks and have some more planned coming up to kind of talk through some of these items. So I'm happy to send that out again if needed.
Yeah, I'll resend
that on Monday. So just jumping into what the purpose of this assessment involves. So really, it's pretty self-explanatory. Obviously, the process involves identifying and assessing risk that may in some way impact the achievement of the university's objectives. But it also allows internal audit to provide maximum value to the university by allowing us to sort of focus in on those impactful reviews and tie the audit plan to those higher level risks. It also provides university leadership with insight by, and you'll see when I talk about the results, I'll be providing a risk profile and sort of a compilation of the results and my assessment from this process. And as I mentioned, it does involve gathering input from the Board of Regents and university leadership, and it does involve just a questionnaire and some in-person or Zoom meetings. And moving forward, this process will likely start quite a bit earlier in the fiscal year. This year it was kind of a tight turnaround just due to my start date, but moving forward, it will, as I mentioned, start earlier. It may be a little different than the way that the questionnaire was developed this year. I apologize, I don't think I touched on the actual results, but as I mentioned briefly, it will involve basically just compiling the results and assessing those, assessing the impact and likelihood of each of the risks identified, as well as identifying any of the major areas, whether it be strategic, compliance, academic risk, sort of tying those to each of the risks, and I'll provide that profile to, as I mentioned, the Board of Regents, as well as the President's Cabinet. So moving on to some of the open items, this is basically a compilation of all of the items, and when I say items, I mean internal control recommendations that were issued by the prior audit team. These are items that were issued but have not yet been fully implemented. The recommendations have not yet been fully implemented. As you can see, there are a total of 61 open items, with 12 of those being a high risk rating. So I'll be kind of focusing on those over the next quarter to work with the process owners to gather updates and also close some of these out if appropriate action has been taken. Moving forward, I provided some additional details within your materials that kind of lay out the way that I'll plan to present these, but I'll always include the aging of the items. Of course, these have been open for more than a year just due to the vacancy within the office, but moving forward, all of the new items that are implemented or issued will include aging as well. And I'll also be providing a quick update on that in the October committee meeting on the work that's been done in between now and then. So, all right, moving forward, let's see, taking a look at the WKU Ethics and Compliance Hotline. So this is a hotline that is available on the internal audit webpage. And this also includes any reports that are taken in person or that may be reported directly to the Office of Internal Audit. This is sort of a case management system used for those type of reports. And since its implementation, which I believe was fiscal year 2015, so it's been out there for quite some time, there have been a total of 33 cases received. One has been added since the time I issued your information, so please just make note of that. There have been 24 that have been closed. That means all of the work has been completed, and these have a status of closed in the system. There are 9 currently in process, and these are just those that were in process, as I mentioned, prior to prior audit team's departure. So I've been working to kind of gather updates on these and bring these current. So 7 of those I'm working on the closeout process, which will involve a proposal to close to both the chair of the Finance and Budget Committee and the president, just kind of talking through the work that's been done and providing a recommendation to close those out. One of those I'm working with another area on campus to appropriately reassign that. This has to do with a matter that is typically handled by that area. And then one that was received in the past couple of weeks, I'm in the preliminary review stages of that one case. So moving forward, I do plan to kind of continuously promote the hotline. There is a WKU's Report It webpage that was brought to me, brought to my attention actually by a colleague. So I will be requesting to have the hotline added to that page. It's really just a repository of all of our reporting mechanisms, whether that be, you know, Title IX related, all the various reporting mechanisms. Basically, it's broken down, and our hotline is not on there currently, but I'm going to be requesting that to be added. I think that would be a great page for it to be located. And also just continued promotion through the meetings and discussions I have with university stakeholders moving forward, and as I meet with those, and honestly just having introduction meetings over the next couple of weeks, I'll definitely be mentioning the use of the hotline and just making people aware that it's available and it's out there if ever needed. And taking a look ahead, so the fiscal year 22 audit plan, I plan to present this at the October committee meeting. This will be a compilation of taking a look at the risk assessment results. There are also some annual projects that will be included. These are either required by some type of legislation or just annual projects that the Office of Internal Audit has established. As you can see, that those involve a couple of different areas. So these will definitely be included. So these will be kind of worked on starting, I guess the planning process will be starting in the next couple of months prior to the October meeting. And then in the short term, I'm looking to fill the vacant internal auditor position. I know that having the office vacant for some time, you know, we want to kind of get it up and running at full capacity as soon as possible. So I've been working with the appropriate areas on campus and Regent McKinney to kind of just talk through this process, get this process started. And I met with HR, so this will be kind of starting pretty soon. This will be, as I mentioned, just an internal auditor role, and I believe that will be get us at a full staffed office. I also plan to finalize some updates needed to the internal audit charter, the internal audit policy, some process documentation, and our website. So those will be coming over the next couple of months. And this just really involves policy or process updates involving related to, I guess, the risk assessment, final report issues, hotline case process, things of that nature. Also, we'll be continuing to follow up on all open items and hotline cases. And in the long term, I plan to just continue to collaborate with university leadership on the enterprise risk management process. As you all know, this is sort of an overarching process that involves a lot of people at the university. And so I'm happy to collaborate with leadership to kind of just keep that process moving. And then also, our office here at WKU went through a quality assessment review back in 2019, and the Institute of Internal Audit Auditors standards require that a review be done at least once every 5 years, and that's just where an external team will come in and assess the processes being utilized by the Office of Internal Audit, and a report will be distributed and presented to you all. And then I will continue to just make improvements based on those recommendations. So looking forward, I hope to have that planned for probably 2024. That will be the five-year mark. So potentially 2023, 2024. It just takes quite a bit of preparation to get ready for that. So, right. And then the last thing I've got on my slides here is an annual confirmation requirement. As I mentioned, the Institute of Internal Auditors has a set of standards, and within those standards, it requires that the Chief Audit Executive report to the board and confirm to the board on an annual basis, basically the organizational independence of the internal audit function. And we do meet this requirement as I report functionally to the board and administratively to the president. So, thank you again for allowing me some time this morning to provide an update, and I'm happy to take any questions that you all have.
Just given that there are folks who might be watching, yes. What is in the room, what is that hotline? I'm going to put you on the spot. What's the hotline telephone number in case anyone has a reporting? I realize I'm putting you on the spot as I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
Do you know what the number is?
I do not, but I know it's on our website.
There we go. So if somebody has yes. something to report, they can go to the website to find the telephone
yes.
number.
Yes.
Very good.
I believe it's on one of the main pages. I know right there you can report anonymously or you can provide your information, but there's actually an online form that you can fill out if you prefer to report that way.
What's that website?
Yeah, the Office of Internal Audit.
Google it.
Google
it.
Any other questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Long time.
Yes.
We've been waiting for you. I don't know why you were waiting. We were waiting for you. After your
initial assessment to what you just presented.
Yes.
Is there anything that bothers you that you have a concern about? And I realize he put you on the spot, so I put you on the spot as a member of the committee. But, I mean, you got a lot of work, custom things. And it looks like you're getting it organized and all that's great. But we also like, okay, I got this organized. This is what I'm going to report. But now when I go home at night, I'm like, oh, my God. I'd like to know where that is. If there isn't.
Well, I would say, I mean, honestly, just taking a look back at the year we've had, you know, there's obviously a lot of impacts, not only specifically to WKU, but higher ed institutions across the country, as we all know. That's obviously front of mind. And really, just as you mentioned with the hotline cases and things like that, you know, there are a few reports that obviously I'm working through to make sure the appropriate people are involved. Those are probably, you know, high priority on my list, as well as following up on some of those high open items. I wouldn't say anything in specific other than, you know, just like at any institution with any major changes that are happening. I know we've just lost a lot of great institutional knowledge. You know, we're sad to see them, quite a few people leave on June 30th, but I know we've got a lot of new faces around, and so I plan to kind of meet with each of those and work with the new people to kind of just understand. Really, I love the risk assessment process because I'm able to gather input from those that are out there actually doing the work and seeing things day to day. But so far, gathering information, there's nothing that just strikes me as, you know, keeps me up every night or anything like that. So I appreciate the question.
Appreciate the answer. Of course. It's worth noting that we didn't used to have this person who reported to the board in recent years. And it wasn't an easy position to fill, and so I compliment Chair McKinney and the President and others that were involved in hiring you, and we're glad to have you.
Well, I think I speak for everybody saying that we're glad to have the position filled and the update on where we're at. Looking forward to some of the updated reporting that you're giving us. I really like seeing the items in the aging and the priority or the risk of each item. So any other discussion or questions for Jesse? All right, thank you, Jesse.
Thank you.
That's all we have for finance and budget for today.
Thank you very much. And we will move on to Chair Henson and Student Affairs.
Thank you, Chair Bell. Dr. Logan, you ready?
Yes,
we
ma'am.
Had students here today. We're doing that. Our only item is an information item, and it's from the Spirit Masters. And I understand the ladies have been practicing, and they're ready. And Dr. Logan, I'm so excited. We have students here. I'll let you take it over because I'm just getting so excited I can hardly stand it. So I'm letting you take it over. Thank you.
And I'm joined to, well, I'm going to introduce both of these young women in just a moment. But let me just say that this is a wonderful opportunity for us to bring students to the board and to allow them to showcase some of the wonderful work that they've done in this time. And so thank you for this time with the committee, I mean with the board, and really this is going to be a fun presentation today. I'd like to introduce today the chair and vice chair of our Spirit Masters organization. Their presentation today will serve as a highlight of one of our institution's most valuable traditions and represents an iconic student organization of Western Kentucky University. Spirit Masters has been a tradition at Western Kentucky University since 1981. They are student ambassadors for our institution, and their service to the institution is both tireless and impactful. Through this past year of the pandemic, this tradition has not only persisted but sought new ways to benefit our students in this institution. So it's a great honor and pleasure for me to host this group today for presentation to the board. We're joined with our current chair of the Spirit Master Student Organization, Claire Linder, and vice chair of the organization, Jessica Withham. And if you'll allow me just a moment to introduce these two young people. Claire is a senior from Louisville, Kentucky, and she's in her third year as a Spirit Master. She's majoring in mathematical economics with a minor in marketing and a corresponding certificate in public health. Claire is also a student in the Mahurin Honors College, where she serves as an honors freshman orientation retreat counselor for H4. She's a member of the Alpha Delta Pi Sorority, the Order of Omega Honor Society, and the Rho Lambda Sorority Leadership Society. Claire studied abroad through the Harlaxton College in Grantham, England in the spring of 2020. And in her free time, Claire enjoys playing the cello, participating in intramural sports, and spending time with friends and family on the hill. Jessica is a senior from Louisville, Kentucky, and is in her third year as a spirit doctor. She is majoring in nursing and with hopes of continuing to nurse practitioner studies in the future. She is also an honors student in the Mehrin Honors College. Jessica studied abroad at Harlaxton College in Grantham, England, and enjoys traveling. Her favorite travel destination today was visiting in Austria, where she got to live out her dream of Sound of Music interpretation. But not on the hill, Jessica loves to be outdoors and spending time with her friends. She has spent the last two summers serving as a summer camp counselor in Texas and Colorado. Wonderful places. And she's excited to be back in her own Kentucky home here on the hill. I had a chance to work with these two young women in preparation for this presentation today, and I believe that these two students are shining examples of Western Kentucky's student body, and I'm proud to host them today for this board. And I would also like to acknowledge the input and support of their advisory team, which is a deep professional staff led by Michael Crow with Amanda Litch, Dr. Donald Smith, Aurelia Spaulding, John Mark Francis, and Ashley Manley, who all serve to help facilitate and advise this wonderful group. So I'm going to get out of the way because this is where the fun part happens, is when you two get to talk a little bit about Spirit Masters for us.
Thank you.
Take it away. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Logan, for that introduction, and thank you all for allowing us to come share what Spirit Masters is here on the Hill. So we'll go ahead and jump in. So this is our mission statement, and what we hope that you get from this presentation is that Spirit Masters are here to serve this university. That is the main motto that we are strive for. So through this service, which is in various capacities, both in the community and on campus, which we'll dig into throughout the presentation, but we strive to preserve traditions, strive for excellence, and make the spirit of WKU contagious. That's what it's all about. And these are the three qualities that we look for when selecting Spirit Masters. So this is a three-step process where students will fill out some short answers about their time on the Hill and what they love about it, and then they'll come in and do two rounds of interviews. So it is an intense process where we're trying to find people that are here to serve and are eager to share about this university.
Now, as Claire was saying, we have many characteristics that we look for in Spirit Master, but the question may be, how is Spirit Masters started? Spirit Masters was started in 1981 by Dr. Carl Kell, and we actually have the honor of him joining us. If Dr. Carl Kell could stand for us. Dr. Carl Kell served as a professor at WKU of Communications, and while he was here at the Hill, he felt that there was a gap at WKU between students and faculty and among our community. He wasn't sure what that was until he attended a conference at another institution where he saw their student ambassadors greet him with a warm smile, professionalism, and great kindness. And immediately he said, "We need that at WKU." He returned back to WKU to President John Minton and said, "Can I start this organization?" John Minton gave him the green light and said, "This sounds amazing. Do what you need to do. Get it done." Dr. Carl Kell got students together and they created the Spirit Master organization. They started working on the Hill. But how the Spirit Masters got their name is very interesting because Dr. Carl Kell did not want to name the organization. He wanted to be always run by students and for it to be a student service organization. So he took those students, put them in a room and said, "You got the rest of the night. Don't come out of the room until you have a name for the organization." They came out hours later and they said, "We're going to be the Spirit Masters," taking name after WKU's motto, "The Spirit Makes the Master." Now, Dr. Carl Kell has started this organization, but like I said earlier, we cannot have done this without many people paving the way for us, and that includes Lucinda Anderson, who is also here, Jeff Younglove, and Michael Crow, and the rest of our advisory council. So thank you all.
As Jess mentioned, we were founded in the spring of 1981, so this year is our 40th anniversary, which we're very excited to celebrate. And so we plan to do that through a homecoming tailgate this fall. And we have also had the privilege of, over the past year, reaching out to Spirit Master alumni and collecting their wise words, their stories, their photos about what had made that organization special to them. So we've kind of put that together into a commemorative magazine, which is pictured here. And so once a spirit master, always a spirit master, and we hope to celebrate that and live up to the expectations that the people that have gone before us have left, and then to chart the path forward for the next 40 years and make sure that the organization is held up to its standards.
As Claire was saying, once a spirit master, always a spirit master. You are not just a spirit master while you are attending the university. You continue to be a spirit master throughout your whole life. What we learn as working as a spirit master, we will carry on forever. And I can definitely attest to this. I have an older brother and an older sister who served as spirit masters. And they know that Wednesdays at 9 p.m., I'm in a spirit master meeting. They know the traditions of spirit masters, and they hold those so dear to their heart. We have over 500 students who have served as spirit masters since 1981, and now they are all over the globe. They are attorneys, they are teachers, they are professors, they are doctors. They are changing the world all over the world, and that started with their time on the Hill and what they learned as a spirit master. And we are so excited to welcome them back onto the Hill during our homecoming.
So assignments are the meat of what we do. Every spirit master is expected to go above the rim, as Henry Hardin Cherry would say, and complete about 100 hours of service per academic year to the university. So this ends up being 60 hours in the fall and 40 in the spring. This totals up to about 3,000 hours total from the spirit masters to the university, and this can be both on WKU's campus and in the community. If you see us out on assignment, you might see us in three different uniforms that we're most commonly seen in. Jess and I are wearing our formal attire, so this is worn for things like the charity ball, which is pictured above, more formal events. Our most common uniform is a red spirit master polo. That's when we're giving campus tours, when we're serving out in the community. And then third is what we call spirit, which is wearing WKU spirit wear. This I've worn on working for a mud run. We worked a mud run one year, which we got a little bit dirty, so we didn't want to be in our suits. But that's what we'll look like out in the community.
Touching more on assignments, the question may come up, well, what assignments are spirit masters working at WKU and in our community? As Dr. Carl Kettle would speak to his first spirit masters, he told them, he said, hey, you're not going to be just washing the windows of WKU. You're going to be scrubbing the toilets. You're going to be washing the baseboards. You're going to be doing every single thing that the university needs, and that also means the community, and that's what spirit masters do. We do events all the way to the mud run, like Claire was talking about. We pick up people from the airport. We go to high schools in other Kentucky counties and speak about student ambassador groups, trying to encourage students to come to university, to get involved in their schools. We lead tours where there's a need in the community at WKU or anywhere. Spirit masters are there and they are willing to serve.
So this past year looked a little bit different. We did have to kind of change how we served this university. And so we went about reaching out to different organizations across campus just so that they knew we were still here and still eager to serve. So on the left, those were cards that we made to pass out to students that were in quarantine here on campus to make sure that they felt like they still were supported and encouraged by the university. On the right, we had Zoom meetings. We would theme our meetings so that they kind of had a little bit of a lighthearted feel to them so that we could encourage one another. We did a lot of student panels. That's the bottom picture where we would kind of get on and share what Spirit Masters was and then what an organization would need from us during this time. So it was a lot of reaching out, a lot of making sure that people knew we were here.
And with that, it has also opened up a lot of opportunities for Spirit Masters to be involved in a whole different way. Because there weren't as many of our typical assignments that we would do each year, now we are branching out. We are helping with football recruiting. We're helping with baseball recruiting. We have done virtual tours all across campus. We're meeting the need where WKU is. And in order for us to do that, we really had to build the unity among Spirit Masters as well. Because during these hard, hard times, especially in this past year, we want to make sure that Spirit Masters felt encouraged spiritually, mentally, and physically. And those are ways that we wanted to make sure every Spirit Master felt among our organization. And how we did that is we even created a buddy system when we came back on the Hill. Each Spirit Master was paired with a new Spirit Master each week, and they were to either get a phone call with them, encourage them, hear about what their week was, or get a meal with them.
We want to make sure that Spear Masters always felt encouraged and unified by our organization, because we need to make sure that we are unified to be able to reach the rest of the university. So as we kind of have seen where we've come from, we are also looking forward into how the Spirit Master organization can grow and evolve and continue to serve to the best of our ability. So one of our new initiatives was started this past year, but ISEC has these people called Navigators, which are kind of mentor ambassador groups where we will meet with them and they share with us what they do and we can share with them how we serve in our capacity. So it's definitely a give and take, and it's been really encouraging to talk with them and learn how we can best represent every aspect of the university. So we're looking forward to growing that even more in the coming year. Next is Topper Directions. This is brand new for us this year. We're starting, it's the first and second day of school where we, along with other faculty and staff and student groups across campus, will kind of camp out and make sure that first-year students on the Hill know where they're going and feel like WKU is their home, so they're not getting lost on the first day of class. So we're excited about that.
Another thing we are wanting to implement is a getting to know WKU's registered student organizations. As Spirit Masters, we don't want to only represent what Spirit Masters are involved in. We want to make sure that we are representing all students and all WKU very well. And something that we have been working on is creating an educational pamphlet binder type thing for our Spirit Masters, so that if they are giving a tour, if they are meeting someone on campus who wants to be involved in a certain organization or group and we are not familiar with them, we'll have all that information of where are they located, how long have they been here, how can someone join that. We want to make sure that we are representing the whole university well, as if we are student ambassadors. And then lastly, this is a fun one. We're wanting to create a Spirit Master Senior Tradition. Spirit Masters is founded on traditions. We also want to make new traditions. We have come up with some ideas, maybe a time capsule or singing the fight song all across campus. But if anyone ever has any ideas, please let us know. We are very open, and we have the year to think about it.
So I think one of the most special things about Spirit Masters is the traditions that we have. And so one thing, this is a quirky one. So roll call, every meeting we try to do roll call in the shortest amount of time possible. I think our record is 6 seconds. So we're looking to shave off some time on that one this coming year. Wednesday nights at 9, every Spirit Master knows that that is sacred time. We have a meeting every single week at the same time where we go through what the upcoming assignments are, what's going on in the university, things that Spirit Masters should be aware of, how we can grow, what things we need to work on, things like that. Meet Me on the Hill is after Spirit Masters are selected. They are called by the incoming chair and vice chair to say that they've been selected, and then they'll say, Meet Me on the Hill at midnight. And so all current Spirit Masters and the new ones will go up to Cherry Hall at midnight, sing the fight song, introduce themselves, and celebrate being a Spirit Master in the upcoming year.
Other things that we do are big little red reveals, and each Spirit Master will have an assigned new incoming Spirit Master so they can share these traditions. We can continue the professionalism and how Spirit Masters has been for the past 40 years and make sure that we are training Spirit Masters well. So each Spirit Master will have someone to look up to if they ever have questions. Another thing that we do is we like to celebrate holiday parties together. We have this saying that we are a spamily, which is a Spirit Master family. So we celebrate holiday parties together. We carve pumpkins at Dr. Smith's house. We do Christmas cookies with the Dr. Caboni. We want to celebrate and be a family together and be unified always. We always have an end of the year banquet as we welcome in our new incoming Spirit Masters. And we say a bittersweet goodbye to our seniors that are leaving us. But it is a joyous occasion as we can reflect on what Spirit Masters has done in the past year and how we can continue to move forward. And then the greatest tradition that I think is after each and every meeting of our Wednesday meeting at 9, we always end singing the fight song. No matter how tired we are, if we have exams in the morning, every single person has to stand up and we sing the fight song all together, and that's how we end every single meeting.
These are some quotes from some current Spirit Masters. We just reached out and asked them to share what being a Spirit Master means to them. And I think this is the heart and soul of the organization. It's made up of people that love to serve, people that love this university, and just want to share it. That's what we do. You can kind of see some keywords. It's about community, tradition, heart. It's life-changing. It's foundational. The things that we are learning are things that we'll carry through to the rest of our lives and to our careers, and hopefully we'll stay on the Hill as, you know, time goes on. So
I know we've shared a lot of information, but if anyone has any questions, we would love to answer any.
How many are there currently still?
We have 26 currently.
Our numbers range anywhere from 25 to 32, kind of depending on the year.
I must say, it's always fun to have students here with us at this meeting, but I think of the forensics team students and now you all, and think, wow, what was I like at age 21? I can do anything. Do that, and the skills that you get in this organization, as our forensic students do, I mean, they got to carry you a long way in life. I've known a lot of spirit masters. And Lucinda, it's great to have you here. I'm sure you were a spirit master.
I'm honored.
Maybe before time, amazing people who are doing amazing things out in the world, as you all alluded
to. Thank you for inviting Spirit Masters, a group, and Professor Kell, thank you for being here. On one of my congratulatory notes I received from Professor Kell, he told me several good pieces of advice, but the most important one that I remember well is make sure you keep the Spirit Masters close, and we've done that. You all are terrific representatives and do embody the spirit of the university, and there are things that we do as an institution that we couldn't do without the work of these amazing young people. And the most fun part about being a spirit master happens after you leave the Hill, that you continue that tradition and that flame burns bright. And the folks that have been in the organization, and Lucinda, thank you for all of your work to steward them over the years. They are the best ambassadors for this institution, and they all recall their time on the Hill in a way that I've not seen in other alumni groups. And so thank you for the work you do, and thank you for the work you'll continue to do after you leave.
Does anyone have any more questions?
I would just like to commend them as well for a great presentation for the whole program. I think it's wonderful. I'm very proud that I have a daughter that was in the program, and
I'm very proud of your daughter.
But I'll also tell you this, and I think it echoes what Dr. Capone said. Lucinda's a very, very special person. And my daughter being in the program and being able to work with Lucinda and have the guidance and the wisdom that was shared, what you'll be able to take with you, not just what you'll do for your communities and your country, but what you will be able to do within yourself. And so very, very proud of the program and glad it's a part of our family as well and a part of
Thank you again.
Lucinda, it's good to see you.
Thank you.
Ladies, thank
always
you.
Always good to see Dr. Kell.
Yeah, Dr. Kell, it's good to see you as well. And Dr. Logan, thank you. And thank you, ladies, for being it does my heart good to see some students back here at our meeting. I mean, this pandemic was hard, not having our students in our meetings. I mean, this was awful. So it's good to see you all. Thank you all for being here. Dr. Logan, thank you. Go Tops. Woohoo! Yes, thank you.
Now, we did mention, I don't know if you remember me saying, we did mention that we close every meeting with the fight song.
Yes!
So it only seemed right that we close this presentation with bum, 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 bum. Everyone stand up! Stand up!
The Spirit Masters sound much more with it, sounded like, because they got real quiet from the rest of us.
Maybe they should do a training program.
That's right. I think the Board of Regents, yes. Dr. Bale, Chair Bale, that is the end of the Student Affairs Committee Report.
Well, perhaps we should have ended the meeting with that, but we didn't, and we do have some other really good stuff. And we'll move into the Executive Committee.
committees, the board met on June 18th to discuss each item on their respective agendas and recommended submitting the agenda items to the full board for action. Items in the Executive Committee 1 and 3 were not presented at the committee meetings and shall be removed from the consent agenda for further discussion and separate vote. Does any regent wish to remove any other item from the consent agenda? If not, we have action item 1, which involves approval of a philanthropic naming of the ROTC Cadet Lounge. And President Cavone or Amanda, who wishes to?
I will take that one.
All righty.
Chair Bale. I'm pleased to present today approval of the philanthropic naming of the ROTC Cadet Lounge as the First Lieutenant Eric D. Yates Cadet Lounge located in Diddle Arena, room 1508, in recognition of a generous gift from Eric Yates' parents, David and Kathy, as well as family and friends. First Lieutenant Eric D. Yates died on September 17, 2010, as a result of a detonation of an IED device near his patrol in Afghanistan. Yates served in the Army's 1st Battalion, 502nd Infantry Regiment, 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 101st Airborne Division from Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Mr. Yates earned a bachelor's degree from WKU in 2008 and had a double major in social studies and history, and he received his commission through WKU's ROTC program. A native of Rhineyville, Kentucky, he is survived by his parents, David and Kathy. Each year, the ROTC hosts a memorial run in Eric's honor to benefit a scholarship fund that is housed in the College of Ivy Foundation. And this philanthropic naming request is recommended in recognition of Eric's leadership in ROTC's programs and his valiant service to his country. The College of Education and Behavioral Sciences will cover the cost of the sign for the area.
Okay. Any discussion, comments? Not, I'll entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Second. Motion and a second for approval of the naming of the ROTC Cadet Lounge, the First Lieutenant Eric D. Yates Cadet Lounge. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. We'll go ahead and move on to the item 2, which involves the Ted Hornback W.
Thank you. We have another room in Diddle Arena, room 2009. We would like to request philanthropic naming of the Ted Hornback W Club room in recognition of generous gifts from the W Club members. Ted Hornback was born March 7th, 1906 in Sonora, Kentucky. He was an alumnus, student athlete, coach, and administrator for WKU. As a student athlete on the Hill from 1925 to 29, Hornback lettered in 3 sports, basketball, football, and baseball, and he remains the only athlete in WKU basketball history to lead the toppers in scoring all 4 years of his varsity career. Hornback was an assistant coach for the legendary E.A. Diddle, and in 1965, Hornback became the athletic director and founded the Hilltopper 100 Club, which is now known as the Hilltopper Athletic Foundation. In addition to several other athletic recognitions, he was inducted in WKU's Hall of Distinguished Alumni in 2000. He was the heart and soul of the Alumni W Club, and its contacts with Hilltopper alumni letter winners from the time he returned to the Hill in 1938 through his retirement in 1976. Mr. Hornback passed away July 21st, 1997 at the age of 91. The W Club will cover the cost of the signage for the area.
I hear a motion.
So move
it. Let me add also that he was a great tennis coach. I enjoyed his coaching very much.
Okay. A motion. I hear second.
Second.
Second. Regent West. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. The next item involves changing the name of Northeast Hall.
Chair Bale, it is my privilege and my honor to bring this motion and request to the board today. As part of our conversation during the past year, it became clear to me that something was missing from our campus and that even though we've been around for a long time, there was not a single structure named for an African-American at WKU. And as we think about how we build a community that shows our students and our community what we aspire to be, that was a gap. And so I'm really privileged to ask of you to have an honorific naming of Northeast Hall, to change the name to Monday Hall in honor of WKU's first African-American student, Margaret Mundy. She's a graduate of the class of 1960, was a music major and a music teacher, has taught at every school in Logan County. And the measure of a teacher is her students, and she has thousands of them who adore her. She's been inducted, obviously, into our Distinguished Alumni Hall of Fame. I had a wonderful conversation about her and her experience here. And I want our students at WKU who walk our campus to see names and symbols that reflect who they are and what they can be. Ms. Mundy is a remarkable example of the life-changing experience that we have for our students, but more importantly, what our alumni do to transform the lives of others when they leave the Hill. And so once this pandemic releases us, I look forward to celebrating with her, with all of her former students, for her work over a lifetime. And it's an honor that is well-deserved and for our institution well past time. With that, I appreciate your approval, I hope.
Open the floor for any discussion or comments.
Yes. First, let me commend you and the committee that did the work, and I know we'll get a report on that at some point in time, and the leadership of the president for this recommendation. Being a native of Bowling Green and all the things that many of us as African Americans in this community experienced over our lifetime, we always looked up to the Hill. We always wanted to be a part of that, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't know this, that there was nothing here that was named after an African-American. Yet, I don't know what it would have been that I wouldn't have known. And so for us to take this action at this point in time, I think is admirable. Long, long, long overdue, but I do commend the work and recommendation from the president, and I'd like to make the motion to approve.
Very good.
Second.
I have a second. Okay. I'll make a comment, too, having served on a committee that's addressed things like justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion over the last year. I think this is but one step, and there should and will be others as we move forward. And I commend President Caboni for originating this idea on this particular person. So. Any other comments? Anyone in the audience wish to make any comments? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion unanimously passes. Thank you. Amanda will continue to command the stage with an update on her philanthropic efforts.
Thank you, Chair Bell. Pleased to be with you all today and provide you a fiscal year update on our fundraising results. I provided the same information to you all back in the spring and wanted to bring as a point of comparison where we ended the fiscal year as of June 30. As you see there with gift receipts, we were just a little bit down this year compared to last year. As I spoke about earlier in the spring, we did have a very significant $5 million gift last year. So when you think about that in comparison to the year that we've had in a pandemic where we completely transitioned our work, I'm very proud of how our team stabilized and grew in our areas of giving this year. Alumni giving was up almost $1 million, which is significant and really great and due to a lot of our outreach with our DXO program. When you drill down into major and annual giving, you can see we held pretty steady there and then fell just a little short on our President Circle memberships. But again, that is a trend that we're seeing nationwide with participation in alumni giving. We also added about $3 million in deferred gift inventory. So what I just showed back there is our gift receipts. So a little over $3 million was added in bequests and other deferred gift vehicles in our planned giving as well. You know, the president and I were looking at trends. And as I just mentioned, the $5 million gift that we received last year. And so we looked back over the past five fiscal years and accounted for those significant seven-figure gifts that we received in any given year. And when you remove those seven-figure outlier gifts, 2021 was above average for us. In the last five fiscal years, we generated $18.8 million in base gifts, which was an increase of 11.4% over 2020. So again, tremendous work by our team in outreach this past year to continue casting a wider net and contacting more of our alumni and friends in a year that presented us with a lot of challenges. So really excited to see that growth in our bottom level of the giving pyramid. Couple charts here to expand on that fundraising cash trends. So major gifts represented 72.7% of total gifts in 2021. As you can see on the chart to the left, major giving drives your overall giving, as one would expect. So those significant gifts are where you see the big spikes. Our annual gifts are down in the gray bar. We had a slight uptick this year, and we feel that is driven, again, by our donor experience officer program. So the amount of outreach that was occurring to our smaller donors, trying to engage them further to be our next major donors for the institution. So again, positive trends for us when you look overall at our outreach and the number of gifts that we were receiving for the institution. Quick update on our donor experience officer program. You all have heard me speak a lot about this, and we've seen great success. So when you look at our outreach this past year, almost 2,000 phone conversations. That's two-way phone conversations that happen, and 550 unique visits by six gift officers. Every single one of those happened virtually. So we're really excited to think about the growth we can now take into next fiscal year with that virtual program and then layer back in a lot more in-person interaction with our alumni and friends. What I'm really excited about is when you look at that next block, retention and revenue retained. When you look at I just read a report this week that analyzed calendar year 2018. Donations to charitable causes are reaching record highs, but the giving is done by a smaller and smaller slice of the population. For the first time in nearly two decades, only half of U.S. households donated to a charity. So again, our pool is shrinking of who we can get donations from to the institution. So that makes it even more important that we're retaining gifts from those who are currently giving to us and expanding our outreach to try to bring in more donors. So the fact that we retain 71% of the donors that were in our major gift officer portfolios and 102% of that revenue is remarkable. And again, speaks volumes about the great work of our team and their ability to transition in this past year. Solicitations. So 569 solicitations. That was just in a six-month time period. So again, we're talking about volume. And some of those were $500 solicitations. Some of those were $50,000 solicitations. But the volume is going to help yield stronger results for us as we move forward. I'm really excited to share next with you all a short documentary. Evertrue, the company that we partner with for our Donor Experience Officer program, where you're seeing these great results. There's about 25 institutions across the country now that participate in this program with Evertrue. Our outreach has been phenomenal. And due to the program, our success, and our results, during their virtual conference on July 22nd, they wanted to show a documentary. I spoke in the spring about Jahari Burnett, who was a student DXO officer in our program. He's now transitioned to work for us full-time, which is incredible. And he met with Wesley Young, a professor from Radford. I'll show you the documentary. I think it's remarkable. I think it shows it's one example of the outreach that we're doing over and over.
Radford University in Radford, Virginia. I've been there for 21 years. I live in Pulaski, Virginia, as a matter of fact, just a short drive from Radford. And I really love Southwest Virginia. reminds me a lot of Western when I was there. The longer I teach, I start to see the impact that I've had on students. I appreciate even more what I got at Western, and I would love to be connected back to that. How can I be a part of the Western community again? Here of late, I've been able to cultivate a relationship with a young man there who contacted me. I'm not dumb, so I knew it was a fundraising thing, but it's been such a genuine connection. It was in the initial call that I said, I want you to identify a scholarship, an endowment, something that would benefit a student like you. I made the donation. I wanted it to be in honor of the donor experience officer because I was so impressed with him. This morning, I'm heading out to Bowling Green to go to Western, and I will be meeting the donor experience officer who contacted me last fall. I'll be meeting him face-to-face for the first time. I'm kind of old-fashioned. I've written a letter to thank him for reestablishing this connection to Western, and to thank him for his genuine kindness and openness. And so I look forward to giving that to him.
Wesley's a person that he's very open-minded. He changed my whole outlook on philanthropy. He's the reason why I'm really here. He just gave me a different outlook on what this all means and what this all is. The opportunity to really build a long-lasting relationship.
I got particularly emotional when he mentioned that because I thought he felt the connection to me, and I guess it came at a good moment in time. I guess the best way to say it is not something he thought about as a career path. So my understanding is it kind of made him consider that seriously.
Scholarship and bring the donor source. That was a huge, just like wow in itself. And so, just based off that conversation, that was what initially got me thinking about philanthropy and wanting to actually really do this.
I knew something special was happening when you picked that scholarship.
It kind of took me a little while because I wanted to make sure that now that I'm in this position, it's like I want to help people that look just like me, that have a similar background, because I went through these problems. I don't want them to go through the same thing.
And maybe that can help you in your career to help people personalize their contribution.
Right.
In spite of Western being my hometown, I'm very proud of having attended here, and I just kind of felt a little unplugged from the place. You really kind of helped me feel like I have a part of this community. I really appreciate that. And, back. How I look at giving to Western.
Yeah. I just feel like my outlook just on life in general has changed a little bit. I could possibly build a relationship with someone that can help someone else. For me, that's something that has really just grown to the top of my list. No matter where I go, I want to be helping someone. You know, I want to be involved in the community. I want to, you know, just help people wherever the case may be. So I feel like that's how I changed, you know, kind of being just more unselfish, I guess you could say. I think I need another one.
I really, you know, think that relationship has opened my eyes to making a difference in a way that I didn't know that I could. And the sharing of our stories, I think, was really kind of helped solidify that.
Jahari's amazing. We are so honored that he's a part of our team professionally. What else do you say? I mean, we're doing this, and it's innovative, it's incredible. We're helping people change lives, and I'm so proud of our team.
I really, this is moving. I'm the president of American College of Financial Services, and we offer a professional designation, chartered advisor in philanthropy. I'm actually in the program now. I'm not doing well in the program, but I'm in the program.
You hand those down, Dr. Cabone.
So, but we are starting a program about givers of color. And we're trying to reach out to people of color across America that are trying to get more people of color to give in philanthropy. And our fastest growing designation is this designation. And I'm not stealing. I would love to. I will personally provide a scholarship to Jahari to go. It's online, so he did that. He can still do his job. But for him to become actually a professional in this and getting a chartered advisor in philanthropy, from the American College, and nothing would make me happier than someone at Western being a part of that program.
He's one of your scholars. He's a Napa. He was.
He has another scholarship. Yes. Now for something he else. He was the Isaac
Navigator.
So I'm just excited about this. This would be great. I'd love to do that.
Thank you.
One of the reasons I so love it is, so I teach fundraising, right? That's what I've done for my entire academic career, researched and studied it. But doing fundraising is more rewarding for the people who do it sometimes than the folks who get it. And it's something that is a privilege. And people look at fundraising and think, why in the world do you want to do that with your life? That's why you want to do that with your life.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Kudos to whoever produced that, too.
Evertrue, our partner company, yeah. Hired a firm out of Louisville. They did an incredible. They were here for 3 days, and it was. I can far and away say that. I mean, that was very genuine. Mm-hmm. They met for the first time. They filmed it. Best day of my career.
Awesome. I'm thinking back to a meeting. Maybe it was pre-pandemic. I think on Saturday morning. About giving, and one of the things that stood out to me at that meeting that you conducted, I'm sure, was you're doing this stuff. It's a statistic with how many staff you had compared to the standard or whatever, and you're doing that work understaffed, which makes it even more remarkable. And the book Dr. Lonely has me reading, I recommend it. I have recommended it to anybody in academia next, but they talk about the smaller group target audience that you have and how higher education is going to depend more and more on this type of work. And how, like it or not, administrative costs have to go up. They're going to go up. That's part of the reason why, I guess. So,
pretty awesome.
Pretty awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. Does anyone else have any comments? Okay. Good presentation. Todd Stewart. Wow, the NCAA. Complicated. The vertiginous life of Todd Stewart. You got to be dizzy.
Well, I knew we were last on the agenda. I did not know we'd have such tough acts to follow here. But really, a great day. And as always, I would just thank you for the opportunity to be in front of all you. And it's great to actually be in person in front of everybody. What we thought we would do, we have a video that kind of briefly recaps the past athletic season, the 2020-2021 season. I'll have a couple comments after that. We'll be more than happy to take any questions that anybody may have. And then we have a presentation on the name, image, and likeness, which is really the newest thing in college athletics that is impacting everybody. Thank you. Honestly, I know there's a lot going on in college athletics, some of which we'll talk about here momentarily, but it really is a very exciting time for us in athletics because of what we've achieved, the opportunities that are ahead, and the people that we have leading the charge. And you know, what I really would like to point out and what we're really proud of is that graphic right there. That we entered Conference USA on July 1st, 2014, and in the 7 years we've been in Conference USA, we won 32 conference championships. The next closest school has won 24. But what makes it really unique is that 9 different sport programs have added to those 32 titles. It's really been an across-the-board success. Everybody's been a part of it. And we're number one in championships, but in the 14-member Conference USA, we're 13th in budget. And that's pretty special to be able to do that. And I would point out that there's 355 Division I programs in the nation. Western Kentucky is the only one that leads its nation in conference championships while also ranking in the bottom 25% of its budget. So that doesn't happen unless you have really special people, and that's what we have. But to me, what really validates it, it wouldn't mean anything if we weren't having true student athletes that were progressing towards a degree. And we do. Our current average GPA, the average GPA of all athletes is a 3.19. That's the highest in the history of WKU athletics. And certainly this past year for all of us was unprecedented. You know, in terms of the pandemic and everything that we had to deal with, adjusting on the fly. But, you know, we always felt like we could play, and our athletes wanted to play. That was the most important thing. If they did not want to play, then obviously we would not have done it. But we felt like we could. We felt like we had the appropriate protocols in place that would give us a chance to play. And I think the fact that we had 21,000 tests and the positivity rate was less than 1% just shows the total buy-in that we had and that we can. And as a nation, we can do it. You know, we can do this. And that we feel good about the small part that we play in all of that. So does anybody have any questions about 2020, 2021?
Any idea what the vaccination rate is now on your student athletes?
Yeah, everybody included, we're probably up in the 70% range.
You said 3.19 average GPA across the board?
Yes, sir. That's the average GPA of all 300 plus student athletes.
Correct. I'm looking forward to welcoming a topper to Philly.
Yeah.
I just want you to know, I'm now looking to season tickets.
All right.
The process works.
We're glad to have that. It's congratulations. Hopefully you can get that 70% up to 95%.
That's the goal.
Yeah. Any other questions, comments for Todd? Thank you. Great report.
So when people say, you know, how are you all able to do this? It's because of our people. I mean, it really is. On the athletic side, I mean, we've got terrific coaches across the board. I mean, they truly are outstanding people in their profession. They recruit true student athletes who are obviously motivated to succeed in their sport, but also to succeed in the classroom. And I'm fortunate that we have an outstanding administrative staff. And the three up here, which I'll introduce here in a second, are all my senior staff. On the far left is John McCammon, who oversees all of our compliance matters. Olivia Higgins oversees all of our marketing and ticket operations. And Zach Greenwell oversees all of our communications and brand strategy. And these three, I cannot overstate, they have done a phenomenal job with everything related to name, image, and likeness, which is what we'll explain here in a second. But this is the newest thing to college athletics. It actually became official on July 1, and that is that athletes can now make money off of their name, image, and likeness. But these three were in the weeds going back 4 to 5 months ago on this. They interviewed multiple companies before we chose the one that we went with, Influencer. And as a result of the time that they put in, when this became official on July 1, we were ready. We were totally ready for this, even though it may have seemed to be new for some people. We were ready, and the biggest beneficiary of that was our athletes, because when this went online, we were ready. So I'm going to turn it over to them for all the heavy lifting they did, and they'll kind of explain what name, image, and likeness is.
Yeah, so appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all today. I'm sorry I'm going to be a little pirate-ish because I had eye surgery a couple weeks ago, so trying to read some of the stuff is a little tough, so I'm squinting a lot. I may just close one eye and hold this over.
John, you can't hit the curveball right now.
Yeah, not yet. The curveball's going to hit me in the eye, and I hope not. So we're really going to just define it. Our student athletes are really benefiting from this, as Todd said. So what is name, image, and likeness? So we've kind of gotten it broken down to what name, image, likeness, and some of our examples here. So I mean, you can read there. Name essentially is what it is. I mean, it's your name, it's your initials, it's things you hear. The best example, or one of the best examples, and Todd loves this, is the TB12 for Tom Brady. Tom Brady uses that as his primary logo. Tiger Woods, the TW that he always wears on his hat, things in that regard. You hear of their name. It doesn't have to be their whole name. Serena, you think in the tennis world, Serena Williams. Everybody knows who Serena Williams is in the tennis world. So your name in regards to identifying you in that way. Your image is just a picture of yourself. Not pretty basic. We've used Charles Bassey a lot. There's a picture of Charles. That's his image. That's an image of him. And then a likeness, or defined as a physical, digital, or other depiction. A lot of people know that Jumpman logo. That's Michael Jordan. But that's a likeness of him. That was a picture taken when he was doing it, when he was dunking a ball. But that's him, and that's a lot of things that we have from that standpoint of what their likeness is. So our student athletes are being able to monetize or promote themselves using those three areas trying to promote themselves and maybe promotional activities. And then the promotional activities, again, to promote their commercial endeavors of any entity, including media. So using social media, going out into the community, whether it's a commercial, doing a commercial for a local business, things like that, that's what they can do. So we do have a short video here that we're going to show that introduces what we're doing on campus or in the athletic department with our student athletes.
Billy Tom of Western Kentucky, the furthest you've ever taken this program.
And look at him running, driving, tying, scoring, touchdown.
Going out like that, it's awesome. Being able to share it with these guys, it's been awesome.
He headed it on the fans, and it was great.
As you can see there, we branded our NIL program as Climb, powered by Influencer Plus. What we really want to talk to you about today is what Influencer is, the company we partnered with. They started a few years ago, mainly as a content distribution company, in terms of all the photos, videos, other content we have. How can we take that, put it in the hands of student athletes, and let them build our brand and the brand of the institution? But really, in the last year or two, they've pivoted, as NIL's come down the line, to how can they be a one-stop shop for everything that we need for name, image, and likeness. They really have made it really customizable to where we can take what we need as an institution, make it unique to our program, and brand it, and that's where Climb has come in. There's three pieces, I guess, that we want to hit on today that we're all going to talk about different parts, products they offer. The first part is the core product. That's their bread and butter. That's the content distribution, the things they've already been doing. Livia will talk a little bit about that, what we're doing with brand building. There's the verified product, which is really what's come out of NIL. That's the compliance. That's the education. That's helping them use external marketplaces to find deals. John and Olivia will talk a little about that. And then there's the Plus package, which is essentially additional add-ons, things that give us a competitive edge. I'll talk a little more about those in terms of fair market value tools that we're giving student athletes, some of the recruiting strategy that we're able to do. In terms of the Plus package, we wanted to give you all a snapshot This is by no means everyone that's working with Influencer at the Plus level, but they're adding people every day. But obviously some very recognizable brands on here with us, Kentucky, North Carolina, Michigan State, but even some of our Conference USA peers in terms of UAB and Charlotte and other people who are working at this level. These are really the four main goals that we built as we were looking for what we needed from Influencer and what we needed to have in our own program. Building your own brand, being able to educate yourself, finding opportunities, and knowing your worth. And so we knew we wanted everything that we had to be able to fit within that in terms of what Influencer could offer us. So I'll kick it over to Olivia. She'll talk about building your brand and the core package that we're doing.
Before I get into what Influencer Core offers our student athletes, I also wanted to explain to you all our onboarding process with our student athletes so you can just understand a little bit more the strategic steps we've been taking for our student athletes that are here on campus. So obviously everyone's not on campus right now, but some of the teams that we've onboarded so far is football, which is obviously the biggest beast, men's basketball, women's basketball, volleyball, and soccer. And the plan that we took to do that was we had a PDF full of our policies, our institutional policies for name, image, and likeness. We met with every single team just to cover the policies. John and his crew handled that. We did that specifically for the reason that an app filled with photos of yourself is extremely likable. So we had to keep their attention, and we wanted to make sure that they understood the rules that they have to take when doing deals with their name, image, and likeness. So we would meet with each team individually to cover our policies, our biggest rules. Which most of you probably would know, our biggest rule is no institutional marks. They can't use any of that for their transactional activity towards their promotional activity, all the way down to our university colors. It has to be promotely for their name, image, and their likeness, nothing that involves our institutional marks or branding. So that was a big thing that we covered, talking about how their coaches, staff members cannot help them in any transactional activity. And then we met with them to onboard them to this app, which is obviously the most exciting part. And Influencer has been a great partner so far. They have met on Zoom individually with each one of these teams and explained exactly how to onboard them onto this app. They received a text message prior to that meeting. They would get that text message. They would download the app in the App Store and then immediately log in and immediately see pictures that we had uploaded for their individual content. That was the one thing we didn't want to do, was give them an app with empty content. And so we made sure to strategically do that for each and every team. So we have successfully onboarded those teams. Obviously, we don't want to onboard other teams virtually, so we're waiting for them to get on campus when they get here in the next couple of weeks. But like Zach talked about, Influencer Core, it's their bread and butter. It's what they know how to do the best. And the biggest thing for us is we're able to provide our student athletes with real-time content that we've been able to give them to help grow their brand. That's photos, that's video, that's anything that when they're in a WKU uniform, they are able to receive on this app in real time. What's really cool about Influencer is all we have to do is drop in galleries, and they have an in-app experience that is a facial recognition and jersey number recognition that automatically tags each and every athlete. So if you could imagine, prior to that, we were looking at every single photo with a photo shoot of more than 4,000 photos and grabbing for each and every student athlete, because we do care to give them those photos. It was just a very, very long process with our minimal staff. So this totally is a game changer for us. And it really keeps those student athletes satisfied so that they can have that content to build their brand. So I think the most important thing is for them to have these transactions with their name, image, and likeness, they must have a good brand. No company wants to work with them if they have 5 followers. And so we're able to provide them with this content so that they can build their brand and they have more opportunities to be able to sell their name, image, and likeness. So that's the biggest part about it. Also, of course, shows them social media metrics, their social media growth. Since they've started using some of this content, they can look back at dates to see how many followers they've grown based on a post or something. Any specifically that they want to see, they can also see that. They can also see that in Core. I think the biggest thing for you all is our institutional brand reach is unreal with this. I think we can post as many things as we want to post from our WKU sports channels or team channels, but you have to understand the reach that our student athletes have is so much greater. They send this and they post, and actually Influencer pulled some number for us. They collectively pulled all of our women's basketball players, and even our women's basketball players on Instagram have 9 times the reach that our team account has. And for men's basketball, it has 35 times the reach that our team account has. And so that just shows the ability that we give them this content, how much our brand can be exposed across every single state and abroad. We have so many international student athletes
that this will be affected as well. And I think that is the biggest thing out of this, because you can think, oh, well, here we are just giving them our content, and now we're going to struggle to build our brand. No, we'll be just fine. If anything, this helps us, because now that is just seen by so many more people, and the institutional exposure for WKU is so much greater. And that's such an exciting thing for marketers, for brand strategy people. We think that is just so, so exciting. But before I move on, I just wanted to let you all know, I will say all of this content that we give them, just keep in mind, they cannot use any of this content towards any of their transactions. This is solely to build their brand, to make their followers greater so that they get more opportunities to actually have transactions. But they cannot use that for any of this. And they actually, I'll be honest, when we told them that, they understood it and they got it. And they were just really excited that they were going to be able to utilize this content to build their social channels in general. I'm going to pass it over to John to talk about the verified portion of Influencer in our partnership, where our student athletes actually get in and report their transactions.
Yeah, so as Olivia said, we onboarded all of our student athletes. I got personally or mostly in front of all of our student athletes and went through our policy. We used our policy very similar to what the University of Kentucky, University of Louisville's policies were. We figured if the policy was good enough for them, it's probably pretty good for us too. So we looked at those, fine-tuned it to what our needs were here. And then we sat down with our student athletes, and then as we talked to them, we said, okay, now that we have this app, we have this opportunity for you, this is what you have to do in order to let us know, because we have to track those transactions. From an NCAA standpoint, NCAA is our governing body for athletics, we have to know where or who's contacting you and what you are doing in regards to working with that company. And we also need to make sure that we as a compliance and institution are protecting our marks, our logos, and also any sponsorships and major sponsorships that we have with vendors around the institution, whether that's medical, whether that's apparel, whether in so many different ways, the Coca-Cola services or anything like that, using some of the brands, making sure that we don't have any conflicts of interest in that. So what happens when they get into the verify and a company reaches out to them is they ultimately reach out to the student athlete and say, we want to use you as a spokesperson for our business, for our product. So here's what we want to do. And it could be anything from giving them a product to use while they're doing an Instagram post or a TikTok or anything, social media post, and they put it and they just want it sitting in the picture while they're doing their thing. Or they're wearing a shirt or something like that. And sometimes it's just providing apparel. And sometimes it's reaching out and going and saying, we want you to do a commercial photo shoot or a commercial shoot for us, and we will give you a certain dollar amount for that. So they go in, they input this information in there prior to participating in the activity, and that automatically, I get a notification that says a transaction has been entered into Influencer. I go in and I start cross-referencing that transaction with our policy that we have to make sure that it does not have a conflict of interest with anything that our institution does. And some of those conflicts of interest we've already knocked down is no tobacco, no firearms, no alcohol, anything that would be adult entertainment, those things that would be against maybe our moral and ethical codes in the institution. And then again, major sponsors that we have at the institution, and then also looking at maybe some posts that are there and monitoring those to make sure our marks and logos are not used. Again, they want to build their brand. Their brand has to be separate from Western Kentucky. Again, they build it within their post, but once it comes into a transaction and working with this company, that's where that separation has to begin. So we review those. If everything looks good, we approve it, and they can move forward. If there's a problem with it, we go back to the student athlete, talk to them a little bit, find out what the issue is, and maybe it's something that we can resolve by moving some pieces around and make it work. But if not, we may have to ultimately deny it. So we're working within that program as well. That program also has some opportunities for education within there. Olivia is going to talk a little bit more about the education opportunities within the verified system.
I think this is probably one of the most important spots in this app. I'll cover this part first. So there's some external marketplace apps within the verified portion of the app. Basically, all that means is Influencer has actual partnerships with some third-party vendors that can help monetize and help make partnerships with our student athletes for their name, image, and likeness. One example is Cameo. Don't know if you all know Cameo, but you can sign up for Cameo and you can go on there and type in one of your favorite star's name and you can pay an amount of money to receive a personalized video for them. So if you love Tom Brady, Tom Brady's probably expensive, but you can get on there, you can say, I really want Tom Brady to wish me happy birthday. You pay the amount and it goes straight back to that person. So that's huge for our student athletes, right? Football player that everyone knows his face, he can get on there in a very generic t-shirt and wish little Olivia a happy ninth birthday, and it'd be the biggest thing ever, and that nine-year-old is stoked. And so that's kind of the app process. So they have partnerships. So if someone did use Cameo, it would take them out of the influencer app into the Cameo app, but it would automatically report that transaction without the student-athletes having to fill out that transaction, and then it hits John. So it's all just a domino effect, making it really easy for our student-athletes. Other than that, I do believe that this is the most important part of this app. We have a portion of the app called the Storyteller Playbook. It's all educational video resources for our student athletes. I don't know if we've said the word taxes enough to them, and they're like, huh? Taxes? And I'm like, yes, it is real life, and it is not fun. Welcome to adulthood. And so we have all the educational videos in here about taxes. Those transactional thresholds and money thresholds for them to be able to buy by. There's also stuff about LLCs. A lot of student athletes have educated themselves and they're like, should I start an LLC? Well, there's a video that says, should I start an LLC? And they're able to get on that and watch that. Other things that are on there, there's actually people in the industry that are professionals. Todd Gurley's on there, Renee Montgomery, Kylan Becker, and a bunch of other athletes that have particular things to them that they think are important. It can say, my posts aren't getting any likes. What can I do to change that? There's a video on that. What's the best time to post? There's a video on that. Financial literacy, budgeting, contracts. Like, that has been the biggest thing. Like, they have never seen a contract like this, and what should they sign, and what should they not sign, and what should it say, and what should it not say? We cannot help them with that. So these educational resources are there for them every step of the way. And so I think that is one of the biggest parts that they can do. And the stuff that they learn through the Storyteller Playbook may not be things that you learn in the classroom. It comes from real life experience. And so I think that's huge for our student athletes to experience as well. And then now Zach will get into the plus portion of our partnership as well.
Yeah, the last piece of this puzzle, I guess, is the plus package. And the thing that intrigued us most was what you see here, the fair market value. Influencers partnered with a company called Navigate. They're one of the leaders in this industry. Essentially, they provide every student athlete with a fair market value of what they could expect to make on a social media post, a one-time post, or annually. There's a lot of stuff that goes into that formula. It's how many followers they have, the market of Bowling Green in the city, what sport they play, what position they play. Like Libby said, we've only onboarded a handful of teams so far. We've seen everything from $5 to $500 per post that athletes could expect to make on a post. Again, that's no one's just writing them a check for that amount, but it's kind of a North Star on what they could expect to make and provides them a little negotiating power and leverage. So if they're trying to work out a deal, they have something to kind of go by. On the other end of that, which I think is equally as important, the people that are down on that $5 range, like Olivia said, welcome to the real world a little bit. I mean, it is a little bit of a needed reality check for some of these folks on what you actually expect to make right now. But the good thing there, like we said, on the brand building, it's not set in stone. Like anything else in the business sector, they have a chance to change their circumstances based on building their brand. So, and they're able to track all of that. They can see the growth in terms of what their value might be, social media posts based on the things they've done to kind of change that. Go to the next one. Yeah. Just last thing on Influencer Plus. There's a lot that goes into it, a lot of services we give. I think the biggest thing is recruiting strategy. As our coaches are going back out on the road, really for the first time since the pandemic, the number one question they're getting that wasn't there before is, how can you help me with my name, image, and likeness? And obviously, I think we've hit on it, but really, we can't broker these deals. We actually can't even access the marketplace that we're talking about. That has to be all on their part. So really what we're doing is providing them tools. I've told you, we can't drive the car for them. We really can't even be in the car. But we can teach them how to drive, and we can hand them the keys. So that's really the biggest part of this. We can actually cater recruiting strategy down to one team or even down to one specific recruit. We can take their social media information, build out not necessarily how much money they can make, but we can do personality profiles, the type of people they're reaching, the demographics, when they should be posting, when they shouldn't be posting, some tangible stuff that our coaches can put in front of recruits to help explain some of what we're doing with this. It's really the basis of it. I know we threw a lot of information there, but any questions on anything?
Fascinating.
Whole new world.
Yeah.
Shane?
Just a couple. Just thinking this through, and are we worried or should we be worried about a shift in advertising dollars and marketing budgets from institutions that would go to our sports programs, our programs, to going all the way down to the student athlete now?
Do you want to touch on that?
I mean, I think that's the reality of it, that could happen. That hasn't happened to us yet. I don't know that it will here. I do think it's probably, that's a really good question. I think it will happen. It's probably more likely to happen at an Alabama or an Ohio State. But we're barely a month into this, and that's certainly something we're keeping an eye on.
Totally separate question. Is there any education or restrictions that we need to know? So like me, and we kind of touched on this yesterday, if I as a Board of Regents member wanted to have a student athlete say, hey, you know, this is Dr. Spiller's class, you should read the syllabus, and he's a great professor. Is there any restriction on community members that are part of WKU entering into these as well?
Really, that's where we give a little bit of freedom to our student athletes. Again, we've got to make sure we're following our policy and making sure that we don't cross any lines in regards to our policy. But really, we've even got a part of our educational piece that says you can work with what we call boosters or donors of the institution or representatives of athletics interest or people that work on campus. You can work with those as long as you understand that our marks and logos can't be used during this promotion. They can pay you as long as, again, we reach fair market value. If they're walking in and you're saying, hey, I want you to read the or do a little video that tells the syllabus and I'm going to give you $10,000 for it, that may not be fair market value for them. But, again, we've seen anywhere from $5 to $500. It's permissible to do that. We can't have any involvement in that, as we said a few times. Again, they've got... Here are the keys. You got to learn how to drive it. You got to learn how to do all this stuff. But we're giving you the tools to educate yourself and how to do it. But yeah, that is an area that they can benefit from.
Just kind of think about where this line is. If we said, "Hey, I'm a student in the Gordon Ford College of Business, and I really love the classes that I've had," does that cross that line, as they mentioned, or not?
Well, we use examples for the meeting as well of. When they promote themselves, for 50, 60 years prior to this, they have not been able to do this. I mean, this has gone all the way back from the inception of the NCAA, is that you can't use your name, image, likeness. And we always joke that a golf student athlete, wanted to give golf lessons. Well, they put a little piece of paper up on a poster and had a phone number and says, get golf lessons here. But they couldn't even put their name on it, which I always looked like third grade art on there. And somebody pulling a number, well, I'm a little scared to pull that out now. Now they can. They can say, oh, get lessons from John McCammon, collegiate golfer, and they can get lessons, but they can't put WKU collegiate golfer and things like that. So that's where, again, we're learning a lot of this as well. It's a fluid situation. We're trying to learn all this information as well. We're getting questions from our student athletes in our meetings. And again, we're saying, this is new to us as well. We're learning just as much as you are. Let us go back. We're using peers at other institutions as well and asking a lot of questions. And a lot of questions are flying all over across the nation. So, those areas.
The thing I would point out that, and this isn't just a challenge for us. I mean, this is a challenge nationwide. In a perfect world, there would have been very clear NCAA guidelines on this. And or there would have been federal legislation saying, answering specific questions. There was none of that. And so everybody, all 355 schools, are trying to navigate this as best as possible with absolutely zero guidance from above. And so these three, again, they've done a terrific job. I feel like we're in as good a place as we could be right now, given the landscape. But there will have to be some adjustments made. There'll be some learning as we go. And it may take an entire year. It may take the entire 21-22 school year of going through the complexities of this and the various things that will come up, many of which we've thought about, some of which we haven't, and before we really have some clear guidance on every scenario that may come up.
I have a question, something you comment on, just for clarification. So Shane says, I'll give you 10 grand to talk about my syllabus. Okay. Probably high, but okay. So what happens? So I put it in the system,
I want the 10 grand. Do you all evaluate and say, man, that seemed awful high. You can't take the deal.
That, I mean, again, learning a lot of these situations right now. And again, Todd talked about the guidance that we've got. On June 1 or July 1, everybody knew the name, image, likeness for several states in the nation had laws in place. Kentucky was not one of those at that time. We didn't have it. The NCAA had no guidance for us. It wasn't until literally 1 week before July 1 that the NCAA and the state of Kentucky started moving on it pretty quickly. And Governor Beshear put an executive order out very like within a week of July 1 and moved everything forward for the state of Kentucky. But it was being talked about, but nothing was set in place. So again, no benchmarks, no guide, no guardrails or anything of what really to work with. And so, yeah, we look at that, and if, I mean, in some situations, if we feel like nothing's being violated, we may be able to move forward with that. But sometimes it's going to raise a red flag.
Yeah. I mean, very good questions here. They're hypothetical right now. Right? They won't always be hypothetical. I think in the event that George, like what you said, something that just appears to be way out of line, what we would do, if there was a literal case here, we'd hit the pause button. And we'd look into it a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get you, because when you make the comment that I can deal with boosters, I can deal with other supporters, you know, their interpretation of market value changes. Yeah. Versus Shane said, I'll give you $500 if you say my syllabus is good. And that's the part that I guess I'm getting nervous about.
Is market
that
value what anybody's willing to pay?
That's exactly right. And then what position to put you all in to say, hey, George, you can't.
This feels like dealing with the virus that's mutating every day. a bit energetic. But Regent Franklin has
Zach, didn't you make a reference, though, to that third-party group that is sort of this reference point for fair market that is sort of a protector of the athletes and athletics department, right? I mean, there's a group that they can go as a reference point, a third-party
group. Yeah, like I said, that's kind of a barometer for every specific student-athlete. Again, if fair market value is what you make it, that doesn't mean they're going to get less or more. I guess logistically, to kind of answer that question, you know, when something comes in, I don't know if we were clear about that, it will go to Sean's compliance office, not necessarily already approved. You know, he can send it back to them for more questions. They have a note section on there for every transaction. We encourage them to put as much information as possible. But if something seems a little out of line, you know, John's easily going to send it back to them. Hey, you're going to have to explain to me why the Syracuse is there. Navigate says your fair market value is this. It's X number of times above that. Why did you all come to this agreement? So there are some checks and balances
that's
there for John.
One more question or comment before we take a bathroom break. 5 minute bathroom break. And I'll let President Caboni have the final thing. And then people can talk during the break if they like.
I think the other challenge for higher education generally is, and athletics in particular, is the notion of pay to play. Right. And so when you think about inducements to recruits to come to an institution, that has been you can't do that, right? It's against NCAA policy. And you still can't do that. But there are things that have been approved that are getting really close to that when you look at them. So, for example, University of Miami, there is a group that has given the football team enough money where every player will have a $500 a month stipend for the entire team. That's $6,000 a year. Is that pay to play? If I go to Miami, I know that I'm going to have $6,000 a year, $500 a month stipend. That's pretty close to it. NCAA says, no, that's good. So we're in a really weird place.
Well, and a tough part about this is that we've literally almost overnight gone from situation where there were a lot of rules and regulations to almost like flipping the switch, and then overnight there aren't. It's not like it's been a gradual phase in. It's just been literally from June 30th to July 1, everything changed.
And I'll just touch on something and then we can break. Just so everyone's aware, our student athletes are told to report these transactions 7 days prior before they happen. That gives us time to look at them, see if they're fishy by any means, or approve them and then flag them. So that is in their policies, that they should report every single transaction 7 days prior to it actually happening. And some football players have asked us, what can I be? And I said, well, you're Olivia Higgins, college football player. You're not the WKU football player. You're not the Gordon Ford College of Business, but you're a business student. So just finding those ways to still expand on their name, image, and likeness without using our brand specifically. But it's a, it's fun.
Thank you all doing it.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
safe.
Yeah. It's keep us like some sleepless nights to me. It's 11:03. We will be back here at 11:10. You got 7 minutes. All right. I think we have everybody back in place.
All right. I make a motion to go into closed session pursuant to KRS 61.8101B for deliberations on the future acquisition or sale of real property. I now move that we enter into closed session for limited discussion. No action will be taken in closed session.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to go into closed session. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, we will need to clear the room of any.
All right, go.
The board has now returned to open session. The discussions and deliberations during the closed session were restricted to those stated in the motion, and no formal action was taken by the board in closed session. I'll now entertain a motion to authorize the university to lease the property on 1546 State Street.
So moved.
I second.
Have a motion and a second to authorize the university to lease 1546 State Street property. Any discussion? Further questions, discussions, deliberations? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. We have some announcements and future dates, which everyone should commit to their calendars. There is one thing not on here that I do need to mention, and that's the CPE meeting in Louisville in September. I believe it's the 14th and 15th
That's correct.
Of September in Louisville. We've all had notice of that, and I will say those are good meetings. We haven't had one in a couple of years because of the pandemic, but it does allow not only our board to come and get meaningful continuing education, but you interact with members of other boards across the state, and there's always value in that as well. So I encourage, strongly recommend everyone to get there if at all possible, and hope to see everyone there. That might be the next time we would see each other in person.
On vacation, which is another opportunity for us all to gather. This is the welcome back to faculty and staff on Monday, the 16th of August. 10 Kim, help me out.
I'm trying to check.
I think it's at 10 o'clock in the morning, as of today, in Van Meter Hall. And we'd love to have you. This is not a command performance kind of thing, but it is nice to.
Yes, it's a nice event. Anybody can, that is worth going to as well.
And we just need. I was going to let Kim know I was going to come.
Yeah, Kim or Beth will be in the seat at that point. So Beth,
I'll be there.
If they don't close the Canadian border, I'll be there. Or if they do,
they do close.
Yeah, I've got 10 a.m. on the 16th.
10 a.m. close, and he can't go back.
Watch yourself.
Can you not get back in if they do?
August 16th. Yes, August
16th. There you go, doctor.
Okay. Any other announcements? Any other comments? I think it's been a really nice 2 days. I love seeing everybody. And again, Linda wishes she could have been here and would have been here other than things beyond her control, but having the rest of us here and being able to interact with not just the new people, but all of the president's council and important people across the university has great value to all of us. So, and great value to the university.
Here.
Brian has graciously offered to do a walking tour with me sometime to show all the things that are happening, and I hope to do that mid-late September, and if we make that happen, maybe we can let others know, so anybody that could be around, I bet Doris and would love to do that, and I look forward to doing that. So thank you for that.
Put me on that list. I'd love to do that.
I figured you would. So we'll be sure that we don't aggregate in numbers that make us illegal, but I think our attorney would tell us it's okay if we have a walking tour across campus.
Absolutely.
We're not gonna be breaking any laws. So with that, we stand adjourned.